Our Tim Alcorn's out in Goodyear, Arizona for our Weed Pro Indians Radio Week presented by Eco Tree Services. Someone who can sing along with this song. He's talked to everybody in this song, I think, practically. Bob DiBiasio is joining Tim this morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, boys. You and
sing along, Bob.
Yeah,
sing
you
along.
And I will get our thing going, hopefully maybe at the end of the month of March. And another year of chatting tribe every Monday morning. But no, I'm not singing along at this hour, Timmy. And as you and I listen to the weather forecast, it's like, I think we'll stick around for another couple of weeks, don't you think?
Yeah, we heard John Loftman on that forecast, and Bobby looked at me, and I looked at Bobby like, really, do I got to leave?
Yeah. We're not coming home for a while.
Well, you guys know what it's like to have an early morning conversation with Bobby D as Bob DiBiasio joins us here at the table in Goodyear, Arizona. Yeah, how many of those guys did you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you were telling me 41.
I was a PR guy when Nap Lajoie played, but pretty close. Yeah, year 41, it's crazy. Yeah, year 40 with the tribe in 2019 here in a blink of an eye, Tim. Just remarkable. You know, we're getting older, but this never gets old.
It's like wine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Gets
you know,
better
spring
with
training,
age.
As you know, best time of the year. This unique off season that we had, you know, different than the last few where we've had to get some payroll flexibility. We are the second oldest team in the American League, so we had to get younger. With that comes payroll flexibility. Obviously, Frankie made a huge jump in salary, going from $623,000 to $10.5 million. Not bad. He deserved every penny of it. Trevor, you know, going from $6 to $13 million. So we had some big jumps this year, knowing that that was coming. And so our guys have a unique challenge to put a championship team on the field this year.
Aside from the salary structures, you were mentioning 41 years in baseball, 40 with the tribe. Talk about some of the other changes you've seen in baseball. Obviously, that's a major component of it, just the way these guys are now compensated.
Right.
But some of the other changes, Bob, that you've just seen in the game itself.
I think the biggest is in the care for the players. When I started, I joke with people that when I started in the late 70s, the post-game spread was beer and cigarettes. And now we have two chefs that are cooking all the healthy foods and teaching our players, especially the single players, what the right nutrients are to put in your body to fuel yourself to be at peak performance, and how important that is. And then obviously the strength and conditioning aspect is, you know, when we were in Tucson, Arizona, my first spring training was 1980. There was no weights. We had not a single weight to be found anywhere. Baseball players weren't allowed to touch weights. And now you see the two-level weight room that we have, and all the strength and conditioning coaches that are here. You know, what's going on in this complex is pretty wild. There's about 230 athletes here, and I think another 150, maybe 175 that care for those athletes, from coaches to strength and conditioning coaches, baseball coaches, obviously, mm-hmm. and then strength and conditioning coaches, trainers, additional staff, video crew. It's pretty remarkable, the huge transformation in this game to make the players the best they can be.
As far as on-the-field changes, maybe the shift has been the most dramatic. You've been around a lot longer than me, but would that certainly be up there?
I would say that if you really go back into the history of baseball, Tim, the dead ball era where they got a little bit more livelier ball, you know, because a ball that bounced over the fence was a home run at a brief period. And I'm talking back in the early 1900s. And when integration hit, then the lowering of the mound in 69, because the pitchers were so dominant, especially 68. I think we had three pitchers with ERAs under two on the Cleveland Indians. Louis Tien, I think it was at 1.68 in 68 or something like that. And so I think the shift is the biggest transformation since the lowering of the mound. It's one of the top three, four changes in the history of the game. What it has created because of the shift, and I think the numbers say that there were 8,000 more shifts in 2019 than there were in 2017. The philosophy to beat the shift is to hit it over their head and into the seats. Well, swinging for the fences creates more strikeouts. There were more strikeouts last year than hits. First time ever in the history of the game of baseball, there were more strikeouts than hits. Only about 100, 200, somewhere in there. They both were in the 41,000 range.
That's an interesting.
It was the first one. Strikeouts, more strikeouts than hits.
And that's an interesting stat because you were just talking about in 69 how the pitchers were so dominant, but it didn't even happen back then.
Yeah, exactly. And so I do think that the shift, that's why there's been so much discussion about the shift and what you should do about it. Should, if an infielder shifts, should they have to stay on the infield dirt instead of be a softball player in short right field? I think, if I read this correctly, the most people that were shifted on, hitters, the top 40 were left-handed hitters.
Right.
Number one, right-handed hitter, number 41, was Edwin Encarnacion for us. They shifted on him. And then the next 20-some after that, I think, were left-handed hitters.
Do you foresee some sort of rule change?
I don't. Talk to Tito, and, you know, Tito will sit there and say, you can't tell me where I can play my players, don't you? And so I think every manager is going to ask their GM, don't you dare vote, you know, when you get to the competition committee that we have to have these restrictions where players can, you know, what are you going to put lines on the field and things of that? That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, you can't take the game out of the manager's hands.
Exactly.
You can't do that. Hey, real quick before we let you go.
Yeah.
I know it's an MLB event.
Yes.
But to have the All-Star game come back to Cleveland, what does that mean to the organization and to the city?
Well, to have the international spotlight on our region, we're so very proud to be able to facilitate that, and we're excited about the opportunity. This will be the sixth time the Cleveland Indians get to play host to the All-Star game, the most of any city that has only one baseball team. Right now, us and the Reds are tied at five. When we have the game in July, we will be the only city with one baseball team to play host to six All-Star games, 1935, 1954, 1963, 1981, 1997, and then 2019. And I, with my time, I've been blessed to have worked half of those. And that's pretty wild.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
As I said, it is an MLB event.
Right.
But I'm sure there's things that the Indians are involved with.
Oh, big time.
Right.
Yeah, check with Curtis. He's running the committee. You know, it's funny. In 1981, there were five of us on the committee. You know, our ticket guy, operations guy, Phil Segge, general manager, Joanne Klonowski, who was our VP of marketing, and myself. There were five of us that ran the 81 All-Star game. It was batting practice on Monday and a game on Tuesday. That was, and then in 97, the committee ballooned to 25, 26 people because of the home run derby and the fan fest and all those things started to prop up. Now the committee's 40-some strong because it's a week-long event, and Curtis can give you more detail because he's been living that world for about a year and a half or more now.
He's been immersed in it.
Yes, indeed.
No doubt. guys, you get to talk to Bobby D every week during the season, but do you want to get a dress rehearsal, one question in for Bobby before we let him go?
Craig and I are all out of questions.
Well, you know.
You got to save them up, boys.
And, you know, we got other radio friends that I don't want to step on their time, too, because sometimes we have to steal Bobby on different days of the week, so we want to keep a good relationship with other people going on.
You know, when you were talking, though, about the shift, it reminded me, I thought there was some sort of Indians tie-in, and I went online here and I discovered, kind of reminded that Lou Boudreau back in 1946 used it against Ted Williams.
Yes.
That's when it first kind of took off.
Yeah, Lou Boudreau was one of the first ones to, on Ted Williams, move an infielder over to the right side. And so the current shift isn't certainly brand new. It was used on a rare, rare occasion, but Lou Boudreau absolutely created the Boudreau shift on Ted Williams.
Ted could get a little chippy. I wonder what his first reaction was to that.
I'm sure he stepped out of the box, had some choice words for Lou over at shortstop for sure.
All right, my friend, as Craig and Bruce said, you've got other folks to visit, but we'll hear from you all year long on
WEOL. You got it, Timmy. Thank you, sir.
Good stuff. Bobby
Talk to you later, boys.
Bye, rain delay. See you later.
In Goodyear, Arizona, and, of course, all of our interviews throughout our Indians Radio Week, brought to you by Weed Pro and EcoTree Services, are presented by Budweiser, distributed locally by Maple City Ice.